This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok for another edition of Star Wars Rang. Me and a guest ranking things in Star Wars, and today we are going back to look at some art we kind of accidentally skipped over this one. We're going to go back and spend time with our favorite pieces of art from the art of The Mandalorian Season 1, and to do that is Joseph Scrimshaw.
Ooh, I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very happy to have been able to spend a little bit more time with this art. This is another of the art of books that came at a time when there was a bunch of different Star Wars books we were reading, and I never got to spend the quality time that I really wanted to with this book. And this one is so fascinating because it includes so many great iconic images that have been featured in the show itself and some great surprises. So I'm really excited to dive in.
It's interesting to look back at this one now because we got the second book. That one was released, and so it was a good time to dive in. And then we look back at the Rise of Skywalker one. We love the art. We love the books. We love Phil Stoltzak writing these books and putting these together. We love all of it. But we didn't spend time with this one, like you said, in a lot of different ways. And it's fun to look back now, a couple years removed, where you're right. Everything here is so iconic, and you're seeing the origins of it. And that's not lost on me. Just like, wow, this is from this beginning to what we have now.
Yeah. The building blocks.
That's a great way to look at it. So you all listening know the drill. We work our way up 5 to 1. We'll throw some honorable mentions in there later. Yeah, this is an audio podcast. So do what some of our Force Center friends have done with the previous Art of Star Wars Ranks. Set yourself down in your living room, maybe get the book off the shelf and flip along with us, because you'll be hearing us flipping as well. which is weird. I have to push the recording devices and laptop way far away so I can fit these wonderful large size books on my desk. All right. With that said, Joseph, we're going to begin episode 149 of Star Wars Ranked, our favorite art from The Art of Mandalorian season 1, with your number 5.
My number 5, I'm ready to share because I moved my water so I don't knock it over on my computer mid-recording. And with that safety in mind, I'm going to page 25. Excuse me. Page 25. I'm choking. See, this is what happens when I don't have water. Page 25, but it's a double page spread. And I'm calling it Mando Shows Grogu to Other Mandos.
It's literally the photo.
And this is just a great image that I don't think I was aware of. It's clearly early thoughts about Mando, about exactly what he's going to look like. There's still some real Boba Fett-ness to his general appearance. He's got the Boba Fett jetpack with the rocket launcher. He's still got the eyepiece that you can bend down. Yeah. He's got a little bit of what Boba Fett is going to end up with of the cloth beneath as well, that's fluttering out in the wind. It's on this great kind of Star Wars plane somewhere. And then holding up Grogu, who you only see from the back, and who also appears to have little horns.
He does have little horns.
Right, little horns. And then a bunch of other Mandalorians are standing around. Many of them a little closer to Boba Fett. Not all of them, but a lot of them. So this is this image that is really about the evolution of the show, that is the idea, the image of Boba Fett being the power that everything Mandalorian explodes from. Ironically, of course, Boba Fett's actual nature as a Mandalorian is complicated, but the love of him, the aesthetic of him, is what this all explodes out from, and that's such a central part of the creation of this show. It's cool to see it in this image. And then just that this has the spirit, this image has the spirit of some of the things that happens in the show, but is so different than anything we actually see. Of like then going like, this is what I found. What should I do with it? Or this is what I'm taking this risk on, family, you know? And it's got that sense of like moment of tension of why is this warrior holding up this, you know, innocent looking fragile creature to a bunch of other warriors? Is it to save the creature? Is it to threaten the creature? Is it because they worship the creature? Just as an image, it's fascinating.
I love it. It has some Lion King vibes. like he's just holding up Grogu like it's the ruler they were all bowed before. We see the covert in the darkness, the dungeons, the alleyways underneath Navarro when we finally get to the show. But here it's wide open plains, mountains, snow-capped mountain range behind everyone there. It's really different, but the same spirit. It's all there.
Yeah. And the just weird different take on Grogu. Those are horns.
Horns, man.
There's horns, or he's wearing like a funny carnival mask. I don't know which it is, but yeah, that is my number 5.
Not great. Oh gosh. And you know, sorry. I just looked at the comment from, there's a great comment from the artist Brian Matyas that did this version. I swear to God, I didn't see this. And below is the sketch version, and Filoni's the artist of that. And he says, yeah, it's also a little riff on Simba from The Lion King. So there you go. It's very intentional.
Yeah, we wanted some way of communicating that there were a bunch of Mandalorians. That's really cool.
I'm not going to say great minds think alike. I can't catch up with Dave, but there you go. It's very clear. It's in the art, people. It's in the art. Great way to start our list. A bunch of Mandos and a horned baby Grogu. We are definitely talking about concept art. My number 5 is concept art that it kind of looks very much like what we saw on the show, which is why I love it so much. My favorite episode of Mando season 1 is still chapter 2. This is a Rick Famuyiwa episode in which Mando gets a little angry at the Jawas. We learn a lot about Jawa culture and their taste treats and their garden patio equipment on top of those sandcrawler, everything. I love the sequence. Love everything about the sequence of Mando trying to fight the Jawas, trying to climb up, and of course getting to the top, and bam, he's shot. And much like R2-D2 in A New Hope, the electric waves all around him as he falls. And that is what's depicted on page 101. An electrocuted Mando falls from the sand call. And now there's a couple different versions of it, different shots. There's a great shot on the bottom of page 101 where Mando's on the ground. Is just, you can clearly, he's like, he's surging and the sand crawler keeps going. But I'm focusing on this one on the top right, Joseph, where Mando almost looks like he's a character from Tron. You can't really see the details of his body, but you see the blue electricity, the lightning bolts kind of circling around him. One Jawa has just taken that shot, just already fired. There's smoke. And then my favorite thing, one of the Jawas is clearly celebrating, hands in the air, holding his weapon like, yeah, we got him. And I just think this is a page to screen kind of shot here. This is why I love these books. I love the far off, hey, we sketched something. We didn't know what we were going to do with it. But this is very much like they sat down with Rick and the artist Christian Alsman's like, I got you. I understand what you want. Let me show you this. It just works out so well. And it's the energy. It's the plight of Mando not quite getting to where he wants to go. And the joy that Jawas. You got to love that.
I love that you picked this one. Chapter 2 and Chapter 6 remain my favorites. Chapter 2, I'm just always obsessed with because it is such a great space fantasy Western story, but it also just feels so relatable of like, you ever have a day where nothing goes right? So does Mandalorian Din Djarin in Chapter 2. All that energy from him of like, Jawas are kind of a pain in the ass, but I'm a Mandalorian warrior. I don't think this is going to be Lord. is the height of that moment where he's trying, right? And this captures it, the energy racing through him, falling, that other Jawa doing the full Tusken Raider celebration back there. Mm. So great.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Absolutely right there. There's so much going on. Mando's very bad day.
Yeah, I love the sun breaking behind the Jawa who's taking the shot at Mando, too. It's just right. Like this great, great detail. This art is always so good. Each individual thing is like this painting, and I love the composition of the way that sun breaking behind the Jawa kind of it leads you to kind of think of them as the righteous one and righteous ones, and they are getting rid of this invader. Well, the sun is on their side, you know?
And then you're not wrong. And you even said it, you know, the Jawas are kind of annoying. And I don't think that's wrong at all, but they're not, you know, they don't deserve that. They don't deserve that. They just, they saw a ship and they took it. It's the life, the cycle of life on Tatooine. So I love everything about it there.
Yeah, it's their way. Even these off-world Jawas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. Apologize. Off-world Jawas. Let me get it right. There we go. So that's my number 5, starting our list off strong here. There, we're up to your number 4, sir.
For my number 4, we are going to the same episode, but a little bit earlier in it, and a little bit earlier in the book. We're going to page 73, and we are going to a Blurg attack. The evolution of the Blurgs in Star Wars are, of course, great, starting in the Ewok special and then popping up in Clone Wars and Rebels and then getting this live action treatment. And definitely one of those creatures that could be like, that's goofy. That's not cool Star Wars. That's goofy Star Wars. And then to have them be one of the many things that contributes to Mando's no good, very bad day. Actually, they're in Chapter 1, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Excuse me. They're in Chapter 1. He's already having a rough time. Yeah, so this is in Chapter 1. There's two images on this page, on page 73. One is the Blurgs charging and Mando in the foreground with a kind of cool action pose. I like that one a lot. But the one on the bottom is, printed, it's a poster.
Crazy.
It is one of these ones that speaks to me because it's just got all this great space fantasy motion energy. It is a comic book cover. It is two Blurgs. Each chomping down on an arm, you can see in the left-hand side that Mando is firing off his flamethrower, but it's just jetting out of the side of the Blurg's mouth. And then there's motion absolutely conveyed in the ways to convey emotion, in the lines of energy that move through the bodies.
Yeah.
But then there's, on top of this, this great comic book motion energy lines. There's the dirt, which also conveys movement. But then on top of it, just maybe it can be sunbeams, but it's just motion energy lines. It's just a classic comic book cover. We're talking like 70s, and this says the Mandalorian must face Blurgs, but will he make it out alive? You know, it's so great.
It's truly comic booky, and I can even hear Ludwig Göransson's music playing, like that real, like almost the Mudhorn Attack music. That's really almost electronica type of just metal on metal. It's just crazy, and yeah, everything about the scene. It's like a double clothesline from the Blurgs here. They're both clotheslining. Yeah. And imagine this again. This is concept art, and you're so right. Blurgs make their appearances in Clone Wars and Rebels and all that stuff, what have you, in animation. But you're right. They start from the Ewok adventure movies, and that's such a kind of a weird place to start, a little silly. So imagine if you're like, all right, so we're going to have Blurgs, and they're going to attack Mando. And it's like, it's chapter one. You're establishing this badass gunslinger out in the galaxy, that John Favreau Instagram post explaining the show before we all knew it was coming. And to do that, we're taking those silly little creatures from the Ewok movies. How do we make them formidable? And this photo, you look at it and you go, I wouldn't want to mess with those creatures. Absolutely not. It's not cute and funny anymore. It's dangerous. And I love that this art does that.
Yeah, it really, really does. It makes them utterly terrifying. It makes them just look like a T-Rex was compressed. This is how what you ended up with.
It really does. It definitely has some Jurassic Park. So you got Lion King vibes, Jurassic Park vibes. It's all through it here.
So many great vibes. So that's my number four, Blurg Attack.
Number four indeed is a Blurg Attack, which sounds also like a great commercial. Like, now from Kenner, get the Blurgs with Blurg Attack. Love that there. My number four, we're going to page 236 and 237, big old splash page there. And it is Stormtroopers and the Armorer. Look, here's the thing. We're learning a lot more about the Armorer. I don't know where it will end. I think you and I both agree with a lot of folks that maybe the Armorer isn't as good as we want the Armorer to be. We'll figure out a little bit more to her story, but we love the character. We love Emily Swallow as the character, and we love the design. There's just been something just so wonderful and Star Warsy about the Armorer's design. So here we have towards the end of Mando season one. This is the Stormtroopers coming to Navarro to take over there, and that great shot in the show of the Armorer down on her knees with her tools, the tools of her trade, in her hands. And is she going to surrender as the Stormtroopers approach, or do what we all kind of wanted to do in that moment, which is kick absolute ass with the Stormtroopers? So this is kind of depicting right before that action. It's a wonderful shot, wonderful art. We got a Stormtrooper just kind of standing. This is, again, a Brian Matyas art piece. A Stormtrooper standing in the shadows, just kind of watching. You got other Stormtroopers coming up, the classic blasters raised. I'm thinking they're going to get an easy victory here. So it's the calm before the storm, and just kind of, I don't know, encapsulates what I love about the armor and the armor's design, the spiritual side, the violent side, the complicated layer side of the armor. A lot going on, and it's just a classic piece of Star Wars art to me.
Yeah, I'm really glad you picked this one as well. I absolutely love this image. I love the scene, but this image captures so much about it. I think you nailed a lot of the great details. And I think one of the emotions that you get from the scene and from this art is like, oh, you fools don't know who you're dealing with. You don't know what you're going to get. That's just like one of those fun moments to have as a viewer, right? To be like, fools. You absolute fools. You are so in for it and you don't quite get it yet, you know? I still feel that way, even though the Armorer is a complex character. The Imperials are not being complex characters. I guess maybe that does kind of play into this image in this scene, is that at this point, I think the Armorer is literally a complex character, in that in the first season and in parts of the second season, I guess, or rather when we catch up with her in Book of Boba Fett, she's doing understandable things. She's making choices to try to protect the greater good of the community, raise foundlings, hold on to her culture so it isn't just decimated by the Empire. That stuff's all great. But then I also think people are complex. We're also learning that she's a cult leader who probably believes in violence as a way of life and in rigid adherence to rules without the possibility of certain types of evolution or growth, which is not great.
Right.
And but that is at play here, because the way that she is sitting with those tools that are practical but also symbolic, the way they are crossed, like this is a stance. Like this isn't surrender. This is a pre-combat ritual stance. And that's like where you get that fun ignorance of like what she's doing in the moment is noble. She's defying the Empire, and she's in this ritual pre-killing you stance in these tools of the Empire. Think, she's surrendering.
Yeah. Her energy is it's Qui-Gon in the Phantom Menace lightsaber fight, but a different choice and different reason for being down on your knees and focusing.
Yes, but she, unlike Qui-Gon, relishes the violence.
Yes, absolutely. Great shot. And I don't own an armorer figure yet. It's on my list, but, you know, we're in that era now where with my toy collecting days, where I don't just buy everything. I buy what I want and what I want to have on my shelves representing the parts of Star Wars I love. And I'm not sure yet on the armor.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I want to get a figure eventually, and I certainly have figures of bad guys. I have plenty of Palpatine, but it is an interesting place to
felt
like you were on her side, and then I think it was artfully done to go like, ooh, but let's look at her in a different light.
Yeah, let's see where it all goes. So that's my number four, which means we're up to your number three favorite art piece from The Art of Mandalorian Season 1. What do you got?
We are going to page 82, 83, another splash page. It is a challenge, to not make this just an entire list of Grogu, and I was tempted by many Grogu images. They'll pop up in honorable mentions and elsewhere on the list, no surprise. But this one, I'm sure I've seen, but I haven't seen it in this beautiful full page spread. It is Grogu by a fire, and Grogu is holding a frog up, and just wonderful lighting from the fire, from the wetness of the frog. It is there's so much going on. Like, we know that Grogu is just going to devour this frog, but if you didn't know that, and look at this image and you look at those big wet kind eyes of this creature that almost looks like, is it studying the frog to understand it? Is Grogu appreciating the meal? Is Grogu saving the frog from the fire? But then you look again at those eyes and like, no. This is a moment of hunger. This is like me looking at like a particularly good piece of frozen pizza before I destroy it.
Like I'm almost like, is Grogu offering you a bite? Like, it's kind of like that, but I think he's declaring this is my dinner.
He is raising it up to just really appreciate how yummy it's going to be, bones and all. But it's a great Grogu image. Clearly, once they had that seminal image that we all know is even sold as merch, of that really finally captured his vibe. And it's there. He's cute, but terrifying in this image. And I think just the nature of it, of like, why is he holding that frog up? I think it's to devour it.
yeah. And I'm looking at the one you're referencing, the classic Grogu one, where they finally, that's Christian Altman as well as Altman here. So he really, really just clued in on the eyes of Grogu, the face, and that cute little smile hiding so much hunger.
Yeah, that vibe of like, of real, like, it's cute, but he's following his instincts, which are to take and devour.
It's such a good shot, such a good piece of art with the embers sparking about. It's truly a campfire moment of a different
Yeah, like, song. Without the frog, you know, and if his eyes were looking downward, it would be this, like, really sensitive, beautiful scene of him warming his little feet by the fire, but instead, it is a moment of hunger.
It is me at a Sizzler salad bar. And I love it.
So that's my number three, Grogu at the salad bar.
There you go. My number three, it's the other side of Grogu. You know, when he's all full up on his meals and he's thinking of people and things other than his stomach, he's a healer. And that's why I go to page 218, 219, a lot of splash pages today, because they're just such beautiful big pieces of art. I love them when you turn the page and you're like, oh, look at this big, large art here. This is Grogu healing grief karga. On the journey towards the end of season one. It's such a powerful moment in the show. But I love the spirit of it here. I love the little hand, the little Grogu hand on the injured arm, the pain that the grief is experiencing here. You don't quite see grief. You may even, the shadows, is that like a blur in the background? It's all the stuff going on. But I love it's kind of like the moonlight shining down on the concerned, concentrating, closed-eyed face of Grogu. Oh, and it looks very much like Yoda. This is one of the shots that pieces of art that I'd say almost it feels like a young Yoda versus just the Grogu that we know and love. Anyways, I love everything about it. I love what it means. I love grief's reaction to it. I love how grief later on, it sets up the humor of do your little magic little hand thing. Like, I love everything about their relationship, but just Carl Weathers in Star Wars. I'll never stop talking about that. I love it. But yeah, just this, if the other one represents, like I said, the unbridled hunger for Grogu has for the world, this has his other instincts, is to heal, to help, to support, to connect with the force and do good with it. So I love this piece.
Yeah, this one's great. I'm glad you picked it. And it does work out well in our examination of Grogu and his instincts and which he follows. He's got the hunger, but he also has that instinct like, well, someone's in pain. There's pain. I'll just make that right. It's so beautiful. He looks so at peace. He does look like he's concentrating. He looks like Yoda lifting the X-Wing for sure. And it's such a great contrast between the peace on his little shadowy face and the sort of confidence in pressure in his little hand. And then to me, just kind of the winner that sells this image is just this rictus, this pain the rigidity in Grief's hand. And you can see the diseased veins, the disease spreading through the veins. And it's painful problem and peaceful solution in one image.
It's wonderful. Yeah, it does kind of look like the arms come off a little bit. So I actually, there's a great note here from the artist Christian Allsman. He does say, in the script, they make it seem like the arm had to come off. So I designed a medical cuff to go around his elbow, like what Luke had after he lost his hand in Empire Strikes Back. Again, I used the Yoda lighting, and the rictus setting in was a way to visually explain that these creatures have venomous claws, or maybe they're so dirty that the wound got infected right away. So a lot going on. And again, a big true, the concept art, the concept design going into all this is just always fascinating to me of how we get from this to what we saw.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, that is my number three. We are working our way up here, but we're going to stop off at your number two, sir. What do we got?
For my number two, we're going to page 190, if we want to all flip in our textbooks.
Everyone, open up to page 190 in your books.
190. I am flipping as we speak, but it is an image of the early prison droid design. Like I have mentioned, chapter 6 is one of my favorites. I absolutely love this look at how the New Republic is functioning. I love seeing more of Din's old life. I love seeing him prove himself, and I love seeing him sort of let out his absolute aggression against all droids. And I love the story that there was this early design, and then as they got into the combat, Rick Famuyiwa was like, they need legs so he can kick them around. But this image on 190 of the early design where these Republic security droids were just kind of big floating pills of dark metal. This is one of those images where Star Wars and Doctor Who come together for me.
Truly.
A huge Doctor Who fan. And every once in a while, the aesthetics overlap. I think a lot of the spirit of the two shows overlap and just kind of approach it in different ways, different styles in times of storytelling. But that hallway is very Star Wars with the white, but that could show up in Doctor Who. And there are many different robot monsters in Doctor Who. The Daleks are the famous one, but there was a while there during the second Doctor's reign where they were just throwing robot monsters at the wall going, we can recapture the magic somehow. We can have more Daleks, right? There's a whole big line in early 60s Doctor Who of robots were like, how about this, kids? You like this one as much as the Daleks? No? Okay. And these Republic security droids, not that the BBC could have made them float back in the day, budget-wise. But besides that, they look like that kind of like, hey, could we get the kids to like these like they like the Daleks? It's a great image that just overlaps my love of the two. A lot of images like this in Doctor Who in particular too, where a lot of the sort of shots of the monsters advancing are some like the beautiful shots, the scary shots. Usually they could afford 4 to 6 and they would stage them so they're marching. And a lot of it is dealing with issues of oppression, with, you know, more recent memories of Nazism. And this image has that power of obviously the New Republic forces are a force for good. But in this image, this looks like this horrible mechanization just sort of marching down the hall.
Great description of it. Great purpose behind it. Yeah, it's fun. This design is based a little bit on the R1 series droid in New Hope, the floating version of it when the Jawas sell the droids to Owen and Luke. But also reminds me of like Disney's Black Hole. Is that the movie from the late 70s around that time? Has that same kind of vibe and energy, which means I would be terrified as a kid because that movie kind of terrified me as a kid.
Understandable. Scary movie.
Scary movie. Great stuff. And it's just so Star Wars-y, right? Just like, hey, droids advance and blasters fire and the hallway almost reminds you of the inside of a blockade runner. A lot of Star Wars in this too.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a great Star Wars image. I don't think it's like, oh, this one looks more like Doctor Who than Star Wars. It's just it's the overlap that evokes that. And I love that it is a prison and you see the clawed hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So that's my number two.
Great number two. We're up to my number two. And this is it's kind of a big one here in terms of just the show and memories, images that stand out when you think of season one of Mandalorian. And one of the things would be the Mudhorn. And the Mudhorn, well, I don't want to say Mudhorn attack. That's not fair to the Mudhorn. It's more of the Din attack on the Mudhorn. And then, of course, the floating pram and all this stuff. Those are images. If you just say, hey, what are some of your favorite shots in season one that will come up? And this is some of the art behind it. Going to page 112 and 113, it is Mudhorn attacking or defending, depending on your point of view. And more importantly, Grogu reacting. This shot is another splash page. You got this Mudhorn, which, by the way, I'll stop and pause here to talk about the Mudhorn. I'm a big animal lover. I know you are too, Joseph. We don't want to see unneeded harm come to animals. I get a little upset at the Bantha deaths that keep happening in to Star Wars TV. I get the whole purpose of the Mudhorn. I'm having a little bit of fun here, but this is a glorious, glorious piece of art here of the Mudhorn, who is floating, to be clear. We'll get to the Grogu of it all here in a second. But he's got this cute little nubby tail. He's got the wispy fur, little paws with four little toes on there. He's probably got some toe beans on there and some real cute teeth to kill you with. And that big horn. I just love the design. It's a crazy Star Wars-y design. Reminiscent to me of a lot of things you might see in the prequels, which was discussed at the time. And I've never spent this much time looking at the floating rhino elephant-like Mudhorn sitting there in the sky.
Yeah, got a little reek in him as we all discussed. But yeah, it absolutely is just great back to the roots space fantasy. You know, what could different heroes of the pulps run into? Like, what if the whole head was a horn? Like that, I mean, that's to me is like, it's what if the whole head was a horn? So you see like the fear and the terror and the power of that wild beast. But then you're right. All the other details like just really drive home like, yeah, but it's not just a monster. It's a being that's protecting its eggs.
Not to dig too deep in it. I'll start getting upset. The rest of the photo is Din in the mud, defeated, almost accepting his fate. And at that very moment when he almost, like I said, releases his life to the galaxy, little Grogu, as we knew there, only the child, or as we all were determined to call him, Baby Yoda, to the end of time. In that pram, which, by the way, the pram's a wonderful little Star Wars design, too. Absolutely love that. But the hand is out. Little Grogu knows what he needs to do. It's his instinct. We already had seen it on display in the show, and it is such a big reveal. It was, even if you kind of had a sense that something was coming, something was on the way, when it happens, it's really glorious, and the Mudhorn floating in the sky. So this photo really just captures all of that. And you think of a lasting image. This is the Mudhorn clan, a clan of two right now, right? Mm-hmm. Flying around an N1 starfighter. This is what do you think? This is probably, Din would hang this on the wall of his apartment.
Yeah, absolutely. That this is the true beginning of their relationship. And, you know, from the armor's perspective, the enemy they vanquished together. So that must be, and it's the armor who decided that, right? That's the sigil. Yeah. You defeated something. And he's like, yeah, but only with help of an enemy. And by the time the enemy is no longer an enemy, but a foundling, it's still the sigil because this is the moment. This image is so great. You're right. It's so great in the show. It's great to think back of like, okay, we had a week and, you know, it's a baby Yoda. But does that necessarily mean it uses the Force? Like, that's a question that's hanging over.
Yeah.
You know, and then to have such a big, big, the answer to that question that's been on your mind is yes. It's the episode's really well constructed. And this image captures the power of that. Obviously, these artists are all phenomenal, but it's just really fun for me to look at these and try to make use of some of my college education when it comes to composition. I absolutely love how much this is this. Massive contrast between the huge amount of space that is taken up by the massive Mudhorn and then the tiny little Grogu in the pram exerting so much more power. And then the way that the all of the lines have these rhythms to repeat one another, that the swoop of the rocks repeats the rhythm of the Mudhorn's horn. And the way that Din is collapsed is also repeating the rhythm of the Mudhorn's horn, so that what your eye is drawn to is the tension, the space between these two matching swoops of the horn in Din, and the only thing in between them is that little tiny hand.
So good. I can't explain it that well, sir, but I could just say it's great. It's just wonderful. And look, all my I mean, again, having a little bit of fun with my thoughts on the Mudhorn. I get it's such a wonderful part of the story. And come on, Suga. But it does help me a little bit to know that this is the moment and that these two will be forever connected by what they experienced here and that their sigil will be a Mudhorn going forward. And it is already in the show. So I'll take solace in that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it's not casual, right? I mean, we've had some definite, unfortunate animal moments that are super casual. This one is not casual.
Not casual at all. Big photo, put it on a wall, put it on a van, make it a mural. This is why we love discussing these pieces of art. And we have reached our number ones, but before we get to that, we're going to have some honorable mentions. And before we get to that, we're going to take a quick break here on Star Wars Ranked.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome back to Star Wars Ranked. I'm Kat Nabsock along with Joseph Grimshaw, and we are ranking our favorite pieces of art in the Art of Mandalorian Season 1 book. We hope you have an opportunity. Maybe not all of you. Maybe you might be driving. Don't look at the book while driving. Or maybe you're at work. We understand. But maybe you're at home in your den and you got the book down off your shelf and you're flipping the pages with us. A lot of fun. As always, Joseph, honorable mentions. There's a few. We often have to limit ourselves here. What are some of the ones on your list?
I limited myself to five. I'm going to page 228. This is another Grogu image, but entirely different and extremely upsetting. This is from the end of season one. The biker scouts have shot down the Blurg and Queel. Queel's smoking body is in the lava sands of Navarro. Extremely upsetting. The biker scout has their arm out to scoop up Grogu. So, yep, all the tragedy we know from the show. But wait, Grogu's on his feet running and screaming. It's a beautiful piece of art and deeply upsetting.
It's so upsetting. I hadn't seen it because the Grogu, he himself is a little dark, right? He's almost in the shadows. And I'm having this weird reflection in my studio from the overhead lights. So I pressed down the page and that revealed the screaming face of Grogu in terror with like a little tooth showing through and he's running. My heart.
He's like a little emoji of what if a baby scared emoji. It's awful, but that's the point of the art, and it's incredibly well done in its awfulness to make you feel it.
I'm glad that one didn't make it. I don't think the world could have taken that.
No. And then page 91, I'm going to some concept art, direct concept art, which is labeled is the Ugnaught seat. It is on page 91. And we love Quill. We love the way he ended up in the show. Still grumpy. But this image, there are a couple of them, but the one on the top of page 91 where he's kind of got this tall chair that's got a little bit of like an awning, a cover, and he's kind of got two bowls of food. And then he's just sitting there like a little grump. He's like, this is where I sit when no one can talk to me.
I feel you. I have that chair in my house too.
He's got a little ladder to climb up there too. I think I put this in one just out of envy of like, I want a little chair that I climb up to. It's outside. It's got the awning, so I'm not going to burn. And this is my, I got snacks up there and it's my leave me alone chair.
He looks like a lifeguard that doesn't care.
Let him drown, says Quill.
I'm not coming down.
Told you not to run.
I would have loved to see that in the show. I'd love to get a figure of this collection.
Oh, gosh, yes. Mm. Yeah, that's I got great. A Quill action figure, but I don't have a concept art Quill's Ugnaught seat action figure, which I need. Moving on to another big splash page. 246 to 247. It is this big splash page of towards the end when Gideon is tracking him down. The TIE fighter shooting at the boat in the lava. A beautiful, beautiful image. There's a lot going on here, but one of the things that made this leap out to me is if I didn't know the story of Mandalorian and I just saw this as concept art, my mind would have been blown, right? It's a real different image of a TIE fighter shooting, spitting green flame into a lava river. And there's someone in a boat and the harsh, you know, scarred land, black land, a fire just billowing out of the lava river, some unknown but cool looking figures in that boat. It's so great. Other thing that I love about this is it can be very, very hard to combine any shade of green and red without evoking Christmas. And this one does it. I don't look at this of the TIE fighter shooting into the lava river at a small boat and going, ah, Christmas. But it's green and red. There's orange in there too.
Have yourself a merry TIE fighter. I love the shot. It definitely one looks. This one would not be out of place like on a lunchbox in the 80s.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I got two more, but do you want me to pass the baton? Yeah.
Pass the baton, indeed. A couple honorable mentions from me here. We got page 32. If you're keeping score at home, there's a lot of Mando designs and different versions, different stages of what we ended up seeing in the show. Love a lot of that there. But this, it's so funny. I put it down as light whipping stormtroopers. I realized what I've the mistake I've made. I was just going kind of quick when I was sending you the notes, Joseph. It's the whistling birds.
Yeah.
And there's this great on page 32. It's Brian Matthews's art of illustrating the Mandalorian's whistling birds weaponry. A concept artist, Brian Matthews, was inspired by fireworks such as Roman candles and sparklers. That absolutely tracks. And this is great photo art piece of stormtroopers just absolutely getting walloped by these whistling birds. And you got Mando with his arm extended, the cape flowing in the wind here. But if you look at it, you can see why I was just kind of writing down notes real quick on what to describe this as. It looks as though he is light whipping the stormtroopers like he's in the Old Republic. And so it has this kind of epic Mando fighting Jedi vibe from a card game or something. And it just, as I was flipping through kind of quick, it really stood out to me.
It is just a great, great image. It does. It has a good relationship to what's actually ended up on screen, that fireworks mood translated. But I love in this image that, you know, Mando's kind of facing away. So you get that they fly everywhere. There are two stormtroopers who are being taken down. And then what sells this image to me is that third stormtrooper who's definitely doing a what the bleep is happening look.
which every time he uses whistling birds, there's always someone who's like, I did not see that. Oh, I'm coming. You're dead.
It's like people who get hit by the whistling birds are almost like more pedantic fans. Like, now, how did that work? Explain the physics. Explain the targeting technology. Wait,
you're saying somehow whistling birds came back? What? I'm dead. Yeah. Absolutely.
They just know how to hit the right. How do they know?
So I love that one there. And then also my list on page 55. You can hear me ferociously flipping the pages. Oh, my God. This is one of the ones, you know, page 55. It is the client. It is Grief Karga. But really, what we're looking at is pictures of Carl Weathers and Werner Herzog in Star Wars outfits. There's just no other way to celebrate. I mean, it's just, that's what it is. We got to celebrate these two. We're so blessed to have both of them in Star Wars. It's still crazy to me that we got Werner Herzog in a Star Wars story at all. Grief, you know, Carl Weathers, at some point, that would, at any point you would have told me, whether it's his action star phase, the early part of his career, or even the Happy Gilmore phase, would have been like, yes, absolutely, please put Carl Weathers in Star Wars. But the fact we got him now, kind of this complicated, older guy on a different life journey, much to learn, but much advice to give. He's got some goodness in him, even when you think he's being bad. There's so much I love about Carl Weathers as Grief Karga. And then, I mean, come on, Werner Herzog, just there in this great coat with the fur and that look that he's just about to say, you're a coward, use the baby. It's great. Great. Just love it.
Yeah. I'm glad that you picked this page. I almost added this one to the honorable mentions, but I had a sense that it might show up on your list. Yeah, one of my favorite lines remains, they all hate you, Mando.
Yes.
Carl Weathers, so great. And I love that this is just an image of him in the cool outfit, yeah. Very close to what it ended up. And then, yeah, I love the pose on the client, the way that he's got mm-hmm. this sort of, authoritarian evoking mm-hmm. winter jacket with the fur. And it looks a little like it's got a connection to some of Hux's wear in the yeah. First Order. And then that militant fist clenched in front of him. And it really is. He really does look like he's about to call someone a coward.
Direct some art piece documentary. Yes, absolutely. Love it. Yeah, you're right. I just love Grief. Love him so much. Another one on my page here, on my list here, page 71, titling this one, Quill in the Blurg. Bam, bam. It's a great photo. It is just, I keep saying photo. I know they're not photos, friends. It is just, it's a Blurg. It's Quill, goggles on, harness in hand, just kind of leading the Blurg along. There's action going on because the dust is trailing. They're moving. They're moving as fast as these two characters want to move here. I love everything about it. I could go off about the use of the Blurgs and even knowing the Blurgs and associating them more with Cham Syndulla and Ryloth than I ever did the Ewoks Adventure movies, by the way. But just love it. And if you just, again, you mentioned earlier, Joseph, like, hey, if you just slap this down and say, would you want to see something like this? This is Star Wars. Would you want this? Yes. An Ugnaught and a Blurg on a dusty plane? Ah, please. I must find out what's going on here.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is absolutely like, yeah, concept art of just like, yes, please. I want to know the whole story. Tip of the iceberg. What is that whole story? Tell me everything about it. What I love about this image is the way that Quill's hand is being thrown out. He's got one hand on the reins and he's got another hand that he's walking, but there's almost an energy like he just turned that makes me feel like this is like some weird Quill paparazzi snap.
Yes.
Like this is like almost like you could have the Blurg and then you could put in Ben Affleck clutching some Dunkin' Donuts and it would have a similar vibe to me.
Absolutely. A couple more for me, then we'll have you close out your list here. On page 141, Grogu meets a Lothcat. Love this. Love the note here about Dave wanting to put a Lothcat in the village. This is the Sorgan village, and it's on the floor of the public house. And just this great art of just, you don't see Grogu's face. You see the back of his head, his little cute little head and ears and his hand reaching out. And that Lothcat just kind of like, I will strike you. I don't know what you're doing, but I'll get you.
Yeah, I love it in the show, and this image really evokes it too, of like the real life experience that a lot of us who have pets, I don't anymore, but I did growing up encounter of like, oh, well, I hope the cat and the dog will like each other.
Yeah, this is me trying to wake up a chihuahua to take him potty. What will happen? What will happen? So love that one there. Then also page 168, we got a signature image of the show based off the trailer alone. When we started seeing early things of it is Mando in front of the Stormtrooper helmets. The Well, we don't know what happened to those troopers, but the helmets are on spikes outside of town there. I love it. I love it when showed back up in Book of Boba Fett. And it just him. But this is instead of walking past it as if it's no big deal. It's him kind of staring at it like, what's going on here? So just love it. It's, like I said, an iconic image of season one of Mando for me. So I love seeing the art version of it.
Yeah, I really liked it. It is him sort of looking up at it and taking in the meaning. And I think this is such a great way to sell when the show is set, that this is a different time. Yeah. And I love the kind of storytelling that we get combining Book of Boba Fett and Mandalorian of like, hey, well, the second Death Star blew up, the Emperor was dead, yep. And that was it for these stormtroopers on Tatooine.
That was that.
And Mando taking it in is quite a look.
Yeah. My final honorable mention here, page 206, 207, big splash page. We got a couple blurgs. We got IG-11. We got Quill. More importantly, Quill is lighting up. It's Ugnaught Hookah version 1 is the art by Christian Alsman. It is literally that in the shadows. I think they're on, this is supposed to be when they're on the Razor Crest all traveling, right? So it's around that time. And literally, you know, IG-11 is like loading up the hookah. The whole stand there, and Quill's just taking a hit, smoke's coming up, and it's just great. And Christian Alsman says this about the art: I love it because you're not spending any time explaining the hookah, but it adds so much to the character. I'm not getting down on that ship without my hookah. This frightening monster of a thing is putting essence in the hookah with an oil can. It is true. It is such a Star Wars image. It's an IG droid. It's an Ugnaught. It's blurgs. And they're just smoking out, and it's just hilarious.
It really is great. It really has that, it completes Quill's character of like, look, I've worked hard to be free. I have many noble thoughts to pass on and to educate Din. And also, I'm not going anywhere without my damn smokes.
Bring my smokes. So those are my honorable mentions there. A couple more from you, then we'll get to our number one choices.
I went to page 77. It's a whole page of Grogu concept art, which we could talk about every single one, but I went up to the top, and there's what I think baby version 1. It's just Grogu with wild eyes. It's like Grogu with glowing in the dark lemur eyes.
It's almost like he took a hit of that hookah, and something special's in the hookah.
Yes, absolutely. It's just, it's just the craziness of the eyes is absolutely
great.
Drew me to it. I'm trying to flip to the page so I can see what's actually written. Tiemens says, I was working with Christian Alsman's model, which was fantastic. The opportunities in the lighting and finding some interest here with this new character and then the innocence, even though he's got some years on him. In contrast to the technology on the left side of the piece. But yep, there's some innocence and some scary wild eyes.
So. Some scary stuff.
Yeah. And speaking of scary eyes, that's my final honorable mention is the scary eyes of the AT-ST on page 148. A couple of great episodes from or images from the Sanctuary episode. But this one just spoke to me. It captures what's going on in the episode. It is the picture of the AT-ST kind of in the shadows, a spotlight down on a terrified person running away, a lick of a red flame bursting out, an explosion, some fire, some trees in the background. It's all great and beautiful, but the thing that just kind of took my breath away is the moody combination of that dark blue sky and then those glowing red Satan eyes of the AT-ST, which translated so well into the story, but to just see it in this image, this is just a part of this is just sort of like the power of the emotion of those colors.
Yeah. And there's some other pieces of art in here that are very, you know, not similar in the sense of it's depicting the AT-ST with the red eyes. And it truly highlights what Bryce Dallas Howard did with that sequence of the monster, the dinosaur chasing after everyone. It just captures spirit. And this is, it's such a classic Star Wars vehicle, right? The AT-ST, and it's got a similar pose in this piece you're highlighting, Joseph. It's standing there like I know an AT-ST stands, but those red eyes, everything about it, it's so different and highlights why I love going back to that episode, because initially I didn't take to this one as much as the other chapters at first, and there's some stuff in there that I still might not like, but overall, just love it. And that sequence, I'll go back to it time and time again. It's such a wonderful Star Wars action sequence.
Absolutely. Absolutely a great sequence. And yeah, I've been wanting to do a full Mando season one and two rewatch. I'm sure I will this year when we get ready for season three, and I can't wait to see it again.
Yeah. So those are our honorable mentions. We always, you know, we sneak them in there. It's a little bit of a cheat to keep the list big and robust, but it's just so many things. You gotta be able to discuss it all. So we thank you all for letting us indulge us, I should say, on our honorable mentions. I'm flipping furiously to get to my number one choice. There it is. All right. My number one choice for my favorite piece of art in the Art of Mandalorian Season 1 book. We've talked a lot of different artists here today. A lot of artists' work is depicted. But there's a guy who on an airplane had an idea and jotted it down on a piece of lined paper, and that pretty much sold the show in a lot of ways. We got to give some credit to the man in the cowboy hat, Dave Filoni. And this is on page 20, The Mandalorian Sketch 3. Dave says this: I tended to do a lot of little sketches on the plane, trying to figure out interesting moments for the pitch. John loves this one, the first drawing of the pram and the ball floating in the baby. That's the whole thing. I need to get that frame for John. This was the drawing that, dare I say, really sold the idea of the show. It was the image that made everyone go, even if I don't know what a Mandalorian is, I get what this is. And I like his posture, kind of leaning in, leaning out at the same time. And you wonder, is the kid floating that ball? What does that mean? So I just love everything about it. It does look like you just took a pen or a piece of chalk or something and just kind of sketched it out. And it's so simple. You'd think I could come up with this, but I can't. I don't have these kind of skills. Love everything about it. This has been, you've seen this before. I think they even talked about it in some of the BTS stuff, but to have it highlighted here, just, I don't know. It just stood out to me. It is so simple, so direct, but I think Dave's right. It does capture a lot of the spirit of the show, and it's the big reveal, and it's kind of the reason I myself went from, I don't know, am I going to get some dark and gritty badass Mando? I don't know if that's my kind of Star Wars. We'll see. Oh, God, it's something I had no idea that we were going to get. So that's why I love this art. I do love this piece, and I love what it inspired. So that's my number one choice, a pencil drawing, if you will, on a pad of paper.
I think it is a great number one choice because it does evoke so much about the show that we think it's about the Mandalorian, we think it's about the loner, but it is actually about this surprise connection. In this rough version of it, I forgot this rough version of it is not the fingers yet. It's mm-hmm. the ball. The ball is right. What is connecting them. And there is so much about this that is the great tip of the iceberg storytelling that, like, you get it. You know what it is. It is a warrior looking down at some innocent creature, but it makes you ask so many questions, the way the warrior is kind of half turned away. And like, which way will the warrior turn, toward the child or away from the child? And as Filoni himself says, the ball floating here of what does that mean? And then just in terms of it being a powerful visual image, much like the Mudhorn, you get that great contrast between the size and the stature of the warrior and then the tiny nature of the innocent child in a pram. And there's all of this tension of the negative space. That's what makes the drawing powerful. Yeah, the actual rendering is fast and crude, but it's about a gesture drawing. It's about shapes and energy and the mystery of the space in between them.
Yeah, and what else is coming there? So I love it. You know what? If Dave was ever to auction this off, I would try to stay in as long as I could to get that one there. So that is my number one choice, but I don't think we're done discussing Grogu or Mando at all. Joseph, what is your number one choice?
My number one choice is the same thing, kind of, but not really. It is the same image. It is a later evolution of this first moment of true contact between Din Djarin and Grogu. I'm going to another mostly splash page on page 14, 15. This is closer to the show. We have the image of Din with a much closer to his armor and to his Amben pulse rifle. And we've got the fingers. He's reaching out and Grogu is reaching up. We got the pram. We can't quite see inside it. There's mystery. So it's closer to the image that ended up in the show. It's an evolution of your wonderful number one pick. But the reason this really jumped out at me is what is different than in the show. In this image, we've got those fingers, that possibility of connection between the innocent child and the frightening warrior. But then we also have in clear view violence and devastation
Yes.
We have fallen figures, smoking droids. We have this red, orange, tortured sky. We have cloudy, dark mist of just burnt, acrid smoke from flaming wounds. So to see this contrast, like the one that you picked is so great because it's the beginning.
Yeah.
It's the core, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this is this great evolution. And I love the image that ended up in the show because I think it's powerful. But to see this image, it kind of captures, it's almost like all of this wreckage and smoke and horror is the expectation that maybe some fans initially had, or that you and I were like, mm-hmm. yeah, no, we're down for seeing a cool Mandalorian do cool things, but what else? Because Star Wars is always more than just a cool fight. And it's almost like this tortured, smoking, bloody background is that idea of just violence, cool violence.
Yeah.
And then on only one side is the truth of the show of connection and growth and, you know, the possibility of making a different choice, that heart of Star Wars. And to see them combine together, a warrior reaching out to mirror the reaching fingers of a child in need versus this chaotic violence, immersed in this chaotic violence, is just such a great contrast and a beautiful painting. So that's my number one.
That's great. And Force Center, well said to you, sir. And yeah, the two choices here, it's Dave making the sketch and creating a world of possibilities that then other artists and creators and storytellers jump in and start playing around in and just make something bigger and bolder. And that's truly the creative process and truly the Star Wars creative process. And what you're describing while I'm listening to you and looking at this photo, it's what we talk about of Star Wars always being about hope. Finding hope amongst the fear, hope versus fear, all those kind of things. And hope in a lot of ways to get there, you know, a lot of change, adaption, growth, everything that this show is about is kind of reflected in this photo. I really think you're right. It is a total Star Wars classic action. You know, ooh, what fight was this? We got an IG droid. He's on the ground. What happened here? But the center of it is this hope of something new, hope of your journey, the journey that, that you want to be on. You're already on. You're already there. It's already happening. And it begins for Din, and it begins really again here for Grogu in this moment. So it's truly season one, and it's truly the heart of the show. And this is a great, great piece of art that, you know, will hang somewhere in our minds.
Exactly. This one's hanging in my mind all the time. Well said to you too, Ken.
Well, that was a lot of fun. We have a, you know, we totally get that. We are sitting here, you know, it's like old timey radio. We're describing the pictures we're seeing, but we hope a lot of you get to go along for the ride. These books from Abrams are always great, always fun. Just, you know, captures the creative spirit that goes, starts the Star Wars stories and all the, you know, the creativity needed to tell these stories. It's all there, all here. We're very, we just love these books, and that's why we love diving in. So that is it for today. We are the Force Center Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Star Wars Rank. Maybe share a picture of a piece of art that you enjoy from these books. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube as well. We are also on Facebook at Force Center Pod. You can get an audio book on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. You can get some merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And hey, maybe before Star Wars Celebration, pick up a Force Center shirt so we can find you in a crowd. Huh? How about that? We'll be wearing some as well. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. From there, you can get into our Discord where you can jump in and have daily conversations with Force Center friends. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com, for more information. Joseph, where can they follow you?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out all my other adventures on my website, josephscrimshaw.com, including a link to the latest episode of my other podcast, Obsessed, where my wife and I this week are discussing Indiana Jones. So if you're interested, you can check it out there.
Check it out. Oh, yeah, I'm obsessed with Indiana Jones, too. I'll check that out as well. All right, my friends, that is it for this week. Star Wars has been ranked.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.